Andrew Carnegie is considered one of America's first modern titans. Emigrating from Scotland to Pittsburgh as an impoverished 13-year-old in 1848, he would go on to create a vast empire of steel manufacturing and become the richest man in America. But in addition to being a successful industrialist, Carnegie was a self-educated writer, peace activist, and above all, a philanthropist who was determined to give away all of his accumulated wealth in his lifetime. David Nossal is the author of Andrew Carnegie, just published in paperback. The book was a finalist for the 2007 Pulitzer Prize for Biography and named by the Los Angeles Times as their favorite nonfiction book of 2006. WMNF spoke to author David Nossal recently, and we began by asking him about Andrew Carnegie's peace activism.
Carnegie was a supreme optimist. He looked around him and he saw that the world, he thought, was getting better and better and better and better. Industry was bringing riches to the middle class and was bringing, you know, a sustainable form of life to everybody else. And he couldn't imagine that a civilization that could produce railroads, steamships, transcontinental cables, telephones, and all the rest couldn't find a way to settle its differences without going to war. He was convinced of that, and he was convinced that the age of warfare and barbarism was coming to an end, and that all that it needed was a little bit of a push, and he was willing to give that push. He traveled in his last 20 years the world over to try to convince the leaders of the world, presidents of the United States, the prime ministers, the kaisers, the kings of Europe, that the way to move forward was to sign peace treaties that pledged that in the event of a dispute between nations, instead of sending young men onto the battlefields to settle those differences by shedding one another's blood, that the nations would pledge that they would sit down and talk out their differences, and if they couldn't figure out a solution, they would then submit those differences to an international court of arbitration. And he was convinced that war would be no more in the 20th century. And when his optimism proved wrong, the wrong outlook, and when war not only broke out, the First World War, but quickly engulfed all of Europe and then the United States, and when, you know, millions of young men were killed, he was destroyed. He stopped talking. Literally, didn't talk to his wife, his children, stopped writing letters, and spent the last 4 years of his life in this profound depression.
Yeah, you write, go back into his business career, that he survived and triumphed in an environment rife with cronyism and corruption, and that much of the capital invested in his iron and steel companies were derived from business activities that might be today, but were not at the time regarded as immoral or illegal. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, I think it's fascinating when you look back. You know, we've lived through, in the last decades, we've lived through a variety of business scandals. I guess the outstanding one was Enron. And we sort of think that's a late occurrence. Well, it's not. There has always been, you know, capitalism has always had to fight against the scoundrels and the rascals. And 100 years ago, it was standard operating procedure to enrich for the presidents of corporations to enrich themselves by making side deals. And that's, in effect, how Carnegie made his early money. He was a district superintendent, a minor official in the Pennsylvania Railroad, but really, really smart. And he got cut in to all the deals that enriched the president and the vice president, Tom Scott. And the money that he made while he was in the railroad from insider trading, he then parlayed into his fortune. He invested in oil. We forget that the first oil wells in this country were in Pennsylvania. And Carnegie was right in there. And he turned a huge profit and then invested that money in iron companies to build bridges across the Mississippi River so that the railroads could link the country from east to west.
Right.
And when he realized that iron wasn't strong enough for railroad ties, he went into the steel business. And when he realized that the country was rapidly filling in all the space from east to west with railroads, that new railroads were not going to be built at the same rate as before, he shifted to building steel girders for skyscrapers and made, you know, a second fortune doing that.